Christina Lake Cannabis is using proprietary outdoor genetics to grow and harvest cannabis in Western Canada. And with a 99-acre expansion, production should increase from nearly 72,000 pounds to a harvest capacity of over 194,000 pounds of high-quality, refined cannabis to extract exceptional THC and CBD oils. This cannabis highlight has been brought to you by Christina Lake Cannabis, U.S. trading symbol CLCFF and Canada CLC. ChristinaLakeCannabis.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and from the surface of the planet Earth, we're headed into low Earth orbit. Bob Zimmerman is here to introduce us to space tourism. Space tourism is monetized, but also it is now an array of opportunities for everyone on the planet, all nations, and it's a joy to consider. Bob, a very good evening to you. Space tourism begins with the Russians, Roscosmos, who've always been good about selling seats, but it's going to expand. First of all, what's Roscosmos planning? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, the competition is heating up for commercial tourism, commercial flights into manned flights into space. Roscosmos, which is essentially a government corporation that operates the entire aerospace industry of Russia, controls it all. There's no competition in Russia. It's very Soviet in style. They are top down. They run everything. Well, they announced this week two commercial private, customers are kind of private, two private missions to ISS. The first is going to take place in October, and this has already been known, but they've released more information. They're going to send an actress and a director to the station in October with the aim of making a feature film in space. The working title is Challenge. Interestingly enough, it's being co-produced by the head of Roscosmos, Dmitry Rogozin, and the state-run network, television network, Channel One. So this is the Soviet-Russian way of doing things, where everything's top-down. The guys in charge look at how they can make extra money, and then they manipulate the decision to make it. But either way, after commercial flight, there's going to be payments to Roscosmos to pay for this flight. It's using a Soyuz capsule and a Soyuz rocket to send these two people, film people, into ISS in October. And then in December, Japanese billionaire Yusaki Maezawa has purchased a Soyuz flight on a Soyuz rocket to go to ISS for about 12 days. Now, this guy might, his name might ring a bell, because about 2 years ago, it was announced that he was buying a flight on Starship, SpaceX's Starship, to circle the moon and come back to Earth. They didn't mention any price. They didn't set any date. Obviously, Starship is just in development, so it's a little early yet. But either way, he already has a commitment to fly on Starship, but this was an opportunity to fly to ISS on a Soyuz, and he took it. Now, in this article, John, that I wrote about this Roscosmos 2 announcements, I suddenly realized that we really do have a lot of flights, commercial manned flights, using no government money, essentially. And so I decided to list them all. And going through this list, it is pretty astonishing. In July, you're going to have the first suborbital tourist flight on Blue Origin's New Shepard spacecraft. That's suborbital. It only lasts about 10 minutes at most. But it's private, privately funded, privately built, and privately paid for. Then in September, SpaceX is going to fly four people on a three-day orbital mission in its Resilience capsule. And that also is privately paid for, privately developed, no government money involved, commercial launch. In October, a month later, you have the Roscosmos flight to ISS, where they're going to put the film director and the actress to make a movie. And that's, even though it's government-run Roscosmos, the money coming from that, and even if it's coming from other government agencies in Russia, it's no longer the government. It's no longer the space agency that's paying for it. It's coming out of other dollars. In December, just 2 months later, Roscosmos will do it again with Maezawa's flight, and that is totally paid for privately. And then in January, Axiom is going to send a SpaceX capsule up to ISS with four people, and that also is privately run, privately built, and privately paid for. And now that's five flights in this, pretty much in 7 months, 6 months. It's astonishing. And of course, there are many more flights in the coming on the schedule. Axiom says it has two others. This doesn't include any potential flights that Boeing's Starliner capsule could sell once it gets operational, and it will eventually. You've got, of course, Sierra Nevada's Dream Chaser concept. It's a cargo vehicle they're going to start flying next year, but they can upgrade that to a manned capsule and start selling tickets. And you've got in the very background here the first and the last, which is Virgin Galactic, which could also possibly sell tickets if it doesn't go bankrupt. So there's going to be a lot going on, and it's all private. It's all privately built. It's all privately funded, and it's all competitive. The competition here is what's really going to make this.
Bob, I look forward to Vogue's cover on these space tourists' outfits, because we have an opportunity here to represent what a space person looks like.
As opposed
to, you know, the silvery spacesuit. We can do a lot more with that, especially I believe that the Japanese billionaire is a fashionista. So
that's right. He made his business as a fashion company. He sold it, but that doesn't mean it's not his.
It's all wonderful opportunity to spin off. You remember in our youth, Bob, Tang was a spin-off from the space movement. So right now we've got private tourists who can sell their clothing as what I wore when I visited ISS. Bob, there's joy here, but there's also the question of space on ISS for all these visitors. And you have a piece up saying that we didn't build the ISS large enough. We need hotels, Bob. We need hotels in orbit.
Oh, yes, there's no question of that. So NASA revealed this week that this commercial demand that I just outlined, not all of them are going to ISS, but most of them are, this commercial demand actually exceeds the supply available on ISS. And this has to do with the ports available. The Russians are going to use their ports, and we're going to use our ports. But the ports on the American side, there aren't enough for all the missions that want to fly. That's what NASA's basically saying. They've got two docking ports. They need them for the NASA's own missions and for cargo flights. And so these commercial flights have to fit in around those NASA flights. And on the Russian side, it's kind of the same. Russians actually have a little advantage since they can't afford to do any of their own flights, really. So they might as well make them all commercial, and that's what they're basically doing. In fact, the two flights, the Russian flights I described, are going to be the first where only one Russian astronaut's on board. The other two will be passengers. In the past, it was one passenger, two astronauts. And they're now going to sell two tickets. They got to make money. They're not selling to NASA anymore, so they got to make money some other way. But NASA has a limitation of ports. So what does this mean? Well, the solution should be obvious to everyone. This is a demand that requires fulfillment. So private launch companies, they're going to first of all probably start to do non-ISS missions, kind of like the Inspiration 4 mission in September, which will not dock with ISS. But there's a greater incentive now for private companies to launch their own ports and their own modules to ISS and their own space stations, as you say, which would be hotels essentially. There's great incentive to do this. There's financial incentive. You can make money. No government money involved. Axiom itself has this plan. They're building their own module that's supposed to launch and connect to ISS in 24. They're going to add a bunch of other modules, and then they're going to separate it from ISS and make it its own independent space station. And there's other companies like Nanorax, and I don't think Bigelow is alive anymore, but they were planning to do this as well. This is going to happen, and there's going to be multiple private space stations in orbit because there's a demand, and they can make money. It's really exciting, John.
I wonder if the Chinese are looking at the opportunity here, Bob, because they're going to have a space station constructed according to their plans by 2023, and that could take the spillover from ISS. This is an opportunity for agents, Bob, to place you in. You not only need a rocket to ride and a seat on a craft, but you need a place to lay your head when you get into space. So we move now to more monetization. Bob's wonderful about this. You think to yourself, I'm an astronaut. I can afford this. However, I have to prepare for it. So what have we got, Bob?
Well, this is kind of another spin-off company. This is not actual flights in space, but actually it's taking advantage of the technologies available for a training vacation, a luxurious three-day astronaut training vacation for those that are thinking about flying in space. You know, if you've got millions to pay for an orbital flight, spending $29,000 for a three-day high-end training vacation is maybe a good idea. Get a taste of what you're going to do before you pay for the real thing. And that this is a company called Orbeet, and they are going to offer at two different very posh hotels, one in Orlando, Florida, and the other in France. For anyone who wants to spend 3 days learning what it's going to be like to fly in space, that'll include a 30-second ride on a vomit comet. It'll also include being in the cockpits of planes and jets, so you get a feel of what it's like and experience multiple G's of acceleration. Now, this is a spinoff. They're really just they're thinking, hey, there are going to be a lot of wealthy people who might be thinking of going into space and are not sure if they can handle it. And so take our short, cheap $29,000 vacation, and you'll get a taste, and you'll decide whether you want to put the bigger bucks up for the real deal.
Bob,
and then
this,
make money
this,
on
there's
it.
A puzzle here. What about Orlando, Florida resembles low Earth orbit? And the same for France. That doesn't strike.
Well, it's not. They're going to have, of course, sessions and panels and talks where you learn a lot at these locations. But in both cases, they're going to take you on a ride on a airplane to reproduce for short periods of time zero gravity. That's the vomit comet.
So it's just
there's two different companies that offer this now, John. So that gives you a flavor of low Earth orbit. And then if you get in a plane and experience multiple G's, that's giving you a sense of what it's like on a rocket launch. And these are generally the two areas that most people wonder how they can handle, zero G and the high G's of liftoff. And so they're going to give you an opportunity to flavor.
And if you flunk out, you're still in Four Seasons, right, Bob? Okay, fine.
You got it right there. Right. Exactly.
Rocket Lab is commercial space, and it's now achieved a breakthrough. For Rocket Lab, have they done this before, Bob?
Yes, this is not going to be the first time, but this is the second time. Rocket Lab has its expendable small fat rocket called Electron, and about 2 years ago they announced that they're going to try to make that first stage reusable, like SpaceX does with its Falcon 9 first stage. Now the rocket's much smaller, and so they said they're going to do this in a slightly different way. And when they've been doing commercial launches, they've been doing like SpaceX did, tests of bringing that first stage back, and they've done now. They did in the previous launch, that first stage had parachutes. It came down gently, landed in the ocean, and then they fished it out of the water, and they brought it back to check it out. They found it was in such good condition that some of the equipment on that rocket's first stage was reusable and is going to be launched on the first stage that's going up this coming weekend. And what they're going to do on this next launch this weekend is they're going to try to recover that first stage again. And this time they've made some upgrades. It'll land by parachute in the ocean, but the ship that's going to pick it up now has equipment specially designed to fish it out of the water. That's something they didn't have before. They got to improvise. So that's going to maybe reduce the amount of damage. And they announced that upcoming flights sometime in the next year or so, they're going to try to do a snatch in the air. Rather than have it come down in the water, it'll be coming down gently on parachutes. Then they're going to have a helicopter come by and snatch it out of the air and then gently put it down on dry ground. And then it'll be totally reusable, it looks like, John.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're headed to exploring soon enough. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Christina Lake Cannabis is using proprietary outdoor genetics to grow and harvest cannabis in Western Canada. And with a 99-acre expansion, production should increase from nearly 72,000 pounds to a harvest capacity of over 194,000 pounds of high-quality, refined cannabis to extract exceptional THC and CBD oils. This cannabis highlight has been brought to you by Christina Lake Cannabis, U.S. trading symbol CLCFF, and in Canada CLC. ChristinaLakeCannabis.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.